You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from Vacaville, California. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr. MLS is back. MLS is back is the name of the tournament. July 8th, circle it on your calendar, folks. Put it in whatever you use. Set up an alert. Make sure you don't miss it. 54 matches, 26 teams, 6 groups, 1 champion. We promised. We promised we would be back when and if there was an announcement. And by God, there's an announcement. Guys, how do you feel? It's coming back. Our soccer is it's on the way. We still got to wait a month, so don't get too excited. But at least we have a date now.
I mean, it's good to have that clarity. And it feels, I'll say it straight up, it feels weird to be looking forward to something, to sports in this way, given everything that's happened in the world over the past month and the past 6 months and just where we are as a society. But like, even as everything has been going on with the George Floyd murder and the protests and, the pandemic and lockdown, we've all been watching the Bundesliga and enjoying that. And so I, when MLS is back, I am going to be watching MLS and enjoying that. And I am looking forward to it. Like, we can multitask here. We can fight for the things we've been fighting for. And we can still enjoy sports. And I know the players, a lot of the players feel that way as well.
Yeah, I like the time slots as well. When you look at it, so I think of just being able to start your day with MLS is a really nice way to begin your day. And then, yeah, I'll probably proceed to go to a couple meetings and then maybe go out and protest and let my voice be heard as well out in for the things that I would say really matter right now. I agree to the sentiment that these two things can exist at once. Sort of on a lighter note, I would like to say that guy who asked Bastian Schweinsteiger that question about the MLS World Cup, and Chicago Fire won the World Cup, I would like to fully exonerate him from his from all charges of what he's done.
Oh my God, the Fire are the favorites.
Yeah, exactly.
Chicago Fire have to be the favorites for this tournament.
Whatever we were calling that guy, be it like ignorant or what, he's the Oracle. He's the MLS Oracle. He saw this before anyone else did. We all dragged him, and we did so for no reason.
He was far ahead of his time.
An innovator.
Yeah, I think. You look into the tournament as well. And I think when you look at the games and being crowned a winner at the end, it's something, to follow along with. I think fans will miss it. And to Doyle's point, I think a lot of players will be eager just to get back out in the field and express themselves however they choose to do that as well.
I think you said the time slots. We should probably just give those and we'll give you sort of the nitty gritty in just a minute, but 9 a.m. Eastern, one game every single day, and then 8:30 p.m. Eastern and 10:30 p.m. Eastern as well. So I'm going to have a tough time, let's say, at 6 a.m. on the West Coast, but those late night games are going to be pretty easy for me. Dave, how are you feeling? This sort of comes out, we were expecting it, we knew it would come, we just didn't know how or when and in what format.
Yeah, I like soccer, so I can get behind soccer every once in a while. Love me. It's like World Cup style, wake up to a little bit of soccer, a little coffee, watch, then wrap your head around there, a couple night games as well. So, it's something to look forward to. I would say for me, it'll be most tangible when I can see like what the rosters will look like and, obviously the draw tomorrow. So what the matchups are going to be. So right now it's like, yeah, it feels more real than it did 2 days ago in which we knew about it, but everything was up in the air, but I don't feel yet like, this is what I'm most excited to watch. This is who I think has an advantage. This is the game that I'm highlighting, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. And just so people know, Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, MLSsoccer.com, MLS YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Charlie Davies, Susanna Collins are going to do the draw. I believe Charlie's the one that's going to be picking the ping pong balls or, I don't know, like Easter eggs or whatever it is they've got set up to make this thing legit. So tune in then. And then we're going to go live right after with Charlie to break down the draw, because today we don't know. We don't know how these six groups are going to be composed. We do know that it's going to be three Eastern, three Western. Nashville SC is moving over to the East, which is probably where they should have been from the start, if we're being honest with ourselves. To get to that round of 16, top two finishers in each group advance. Then you have the four third place finishers who also advance. And then it's single elimination all the way. No extra time, no added time. It's PKs at the end of those knockout round games. We'll go all the way to the final, I believe, on August 11th. And $1.1 million in prize money is no joke. But I kind of share the sentiment that you guys are putting out there. Like, I love this league. I love soccer. It is my passion. It is, you know, what has really kind of like guided my life for the last, I don't know, 15 years or so. It's set a schedule for me. It's established a group of friends. Like, I would not have met any of you without it. And I consider that a blessing. But I'm not there yet. I'm not like, I had to write a column about this. And I basically said, in normal times, I would be the like, rah, rah, MLS is back. And I use the phrase woo girl because I would have been wooing. You know what I mean? I would have been jacked up. But right now, I sort of feel like the place it occupies is, in my mind, is a place to recharge. It's a place to sort of say, okay, I have 2 hours to let my brain rest before turning back to the things that I think on this show, we've done a good job, but only in recent history of pounding home. And we hope to continue to do so. And focusing on our society at large. And I'm excited to see how our players use this opportunity. And in the pregame meeting, Kaylin, I thought you made a great point that our players have proven they don't necessarily need the games to be the impactful, intelligent group that they are, that they have tools at their disposal to do that. I hope that this gives them an extra a boost, a stage on national TV, and we don't yet know what the sort of game schedule or the TV schedule is. But I hope this gives them an opportunity to say the things that they think need to be said on a platform that reaches out wider than just their own social media or MLSsoccer.com or whatever it is that's being spread on now. I hope they get that opportunity. I hope they get the opportunity to do what they love too. And I can't imagine what it would be like to miss that for 3 months and not know it's coming back, to be able to be on the field, to have their own place, as Charlie said on the last show, of sort of respite, to sort of like wipe their own like mental slate clean so that they can go back to thinking about and doing the things that they know matter most. I mean, there's beauty in this. I want to see the beauty that they're able to create as humans, but also as competitors, you know, the touches, the moments in the game to show their personality. Like, to me, this is all about the players, and that's all we should be focused on from start to finish, whether it be their safety or their self-expression or their competitiveness on the field.
Well, just to be clear and to follow up on that, the players have been speaking out about these issues. This wasn't something that they just started speaking about in the last, you know, week or month or year. Like, these conversations have been happening for so long. They just haven't been necessarily on MLS channels. They haven't been amplified or really listened to the way that they are now. So anybody who's been following Jeremy Obobese or Ike Opara or talking to Kai Kamara or CJ Sapong, these guys have been having this conversation. It's just nobody has been listening, really. So now the things have changed, right? And everybody's listening and the games continue. And everybody's asking, well, can the games continue and this conversation? Where that conversation has already happened. The problem is we have bifurcated the two. They've been separated before. So now's the opportunity to say, how can this exist with the games and this other thing? When realistically, for our players, for our fans, for our community, it's always been this way. So the difference is like, okay, now we continue to listen and there's just a different sort of, now that ears are a little bit more open for some places and spaces, ourselves included, we'll look at ourselves in the mirror and that and say that, you know, that's our responsibility too.
Yeah, that's well said. That's well said. Look, if you look at the format, what we know right now, you have three groups in the East, one with six teams, two with four teams, three groups of four teams each in the West. You have group seeds, Orlando, Toronto, and Atlanta out in the East. Orlando are the host. Toronto are the MLS Cup runners-up. As Anders put in the rundown, LOL losers, which that's a Seattle fan for you. And Atlanta, of course, are the playoff semifinalists over there. In the West, you have LAFC, MLS Cup playoff semifinalists. You have Seattle, the MLS Cup winner, and RSL, which is the next highest point total in the Western Conference. Teams are going to get down to Florida on June 24th, July 8th. The MLS's back tournament group stage begins. That runs until July 24th. The 25th through 28th is the round of 16. And then you keep moving it down through the quarterfinals, semifinals, and all the way to the final on August 11th. You kind of mentioned the World Cup format and that being interesting to you. Guys, how do you think teams are going to approach this? I mean, they've had an opportunity to think and plan a little bit, but how does this change things? Because this tournament format strikes me as something that we would have just dreamed up in some throwaway mailbag segment in, like, I don't know, like September or in like a June before a Gold Cup and been like, oh, what might this be like? How could this work? Only now in this case, it's real. There's over $1 million in prize money and there's a CCL spot on the line. We actually get to see it happen, to see it executed, to see these players and these coaches and these training staffs, by the way, because that's going to be a big part of this.
Didn't we just do this with the all-time teams?
It's like basically, it's a very similar, I felt like this is a fake thing that now we have to talk about as a real thing.
They should bring Marco Echeverry. That's what we should do. Let's just do the all-time team competition live in Orlando.
Make it six subs and you have a legend. It's like you're, you know, like, oh, dang! Yeah. Wow. Ben Olsen's going to the bench. He's got his legend up. Marco Echeverry's warming up.
Steve Ralston could still do it, man. I'm telling you.
I don't doubt that. I think that.
I do think that depth,
that type of thing. Like,
I do think depth will be a part of this. I mean, there's going to be a lot of games coming fast and furious. And is there going to be an altered substitution rule? Do we know that?
Yeah, we have the five substitutions.
Five subs.
But you can only do it in three bursts. So it's not like you could stop the game five times. You can only, as before, there are three opportunities to make subs. You just have an extra two
plus halftime
available. Correct.
So I could see teams that have strong depth, whether it's Philadelphia Union or the Red Bulls, teams that are really good in tournaments. I always start with Seattle, Toronto, Atlanta, some of the stronger teams, LAFC. And then I think heat may also be a factor. So when I look at my Houston Dynamo, FC Dallas, Orlando, Miami, teams that are used to that type of climate, that environment of playing in those types of matches. And then defensive teams, that'd be the third category that I would have, where Minnesota United or DC United, Montreal. We saw Thierry Henry, how he set up his teams in different ways to survive in CCL. So there's a lot of different factors that come in. It is different when you look at a tournament here. So those are some of the categories that I just began thinking about. Obviously, this is just brand new.
And to Kalen's point.
Go ahead, David.
To Kalen's point, when he mentioned Montreal and what Henry's doing, one of the things that we've mentioned on this show a lot, we've not gone into huge depth, is methodology, which is the process that a coach uses to put in place where he wants to end. So Bob Bradley wants his team to play like this. It's going to take 18 months to get there. These are the process that you go through. So it'll be interesting for coaches. Do they feel like they're restarting at preseason and they're restarting the way they're putting their team together because they haven't played? So then how do you choose to play? Because what's nice is they're spaced out fairly evenly of game, 5 days off, game, 5 days off, and then you move into the group stage. And you see it even in World Cups. Teams play much different when they get to a semifinal than they were in the first game of the group stage. Some of that is saving legs for teams that feel like they're going to go deep. And a lot of that is the team has had time to work on things and develop. So it'll be interesting to see how different coaches choose to handle this of, you know, am I going to use all of the ideas that I want my team to be? Or is it, let's go into the group stage, let's sit deep and work on our defensive shape and our counterattacks. And that way we have that set up and ready once we leave Orlando and go back into whatever season we're playing.
One note here before you jump in, and I haven't said this, there's so many little details to kind of like wrap your mind around. The three group stage games do count toward the regular season. I mean, regular being in quotes, because there is no regular anything at this point in 2020. But the two games that have already been played, plus these three, will count to whatever happens after all this is done post August 11th. So that's something to keep in mind.
That, I mean, it's one of the you know, myriad incentives that are part of this, the CCL spot, the $1.1 million prize money at the end. So like there's stuff on the line. To get to the point about depth, it, like, my initial gut reaction when all of this was being talked about and proposed was like, oh man, the teams with the most depth are going to have such a huge advantage. But I think that's not actually going to be the case, because you need 25 or 30 contributors to get through an entire 34 game grind of a regular season. You know, LAFC had that, the Red Bulls and Atlanta had it the year before. Like, you need depth for that kind of marathon. But this tournament play, three games and then the knockouts, is more of a sprint. And it's a type of thing where if you have that strong, like, 18-man roster, and you're really flexible with how, or flexible isn't the right word, but like forward thinking in terms of how you use those subs, depth, like, I don't actually think we're going to see teams, managers have to go deep into their roster to manage this, because it's a game every 4 or 5 days, is it? Three games over this span of about 12 days or 13
16
days?
16 days. 16, yeah.
16 days, okay. Like, that's totally, like, that's manageable, especially when you don't have travel in between, kind of taking rest days away. So, I like, looking at this, I think it's the teams with the strongest 18-man roster are going to have, like, just a massive advantage from the start. And then on top of that is that sort of identity that Gassman was talking about. Teams that know how they want to play. And we saw that, you know, early this year, Sporting Kansas City knew exactly how they wanted to play. LAFC knows exactly how they want to play. Those teams are going to be able to come out into this tournament and really just hit the go button and be at a huge advantage over teams that are just kind of figuring out, kind of going with the flow.
Which is a lot of teams. There was a lot of coaching turnover. And then there were some teams that had, like Atlanta, who had the same coach, which there was a lot of question marks, or at least some, they were going to have to find their feet. Plus you take away Joseph Martinez. So there are a lot of teams that
expansion teams.
Yeah. Plus the expansion teams. There are a lot of teams that it's going to be interesting. I agree with what Doyle is saying. And we've talked about this a little bit, but Doyle's been on a beach in Queens over the last 10 days. That I think we're going to find that veteran players and veteran teams have an advantage because they know how to manage their body in between the days off, and they know what's necessary in a knockout situation. But when you say depth, if you get an ankle injury, that could be two games. Like, that, it's like college soccer where someone picks up a minor injury and they've now missed a quarter of this thing or half this thing, and then you've got to fill that spot permanently. So that's a different way in which depth is necessary.
I almost feel like having specialists in particular, I feel like attacking specialists on the bench is going to be a massive game changer, because teams are going to get tired. Like, even with five substitutions, teams are going to get really, really tired, because who's been training? Like, San Jose just got into, like, actual group training. They just got into individual training. All these teams are on sort of different timelines and different schedules. And if you have someone who can legitimately, I'm just, you know, maybe a Kalen Carr type, who can come off the bench and change games, in a different world, yes.
I was just thinking Ilsenio the whole time, and I heard my own name, and I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, fitness didn't matter for Ilsenio.
Ilsenio's going to be the most in-shape person when they get there, because he's going to be maintained, and everyone else will have decreased. And he'll be like, what have you guys been doing?
Plus just natural home field advantage, because Brazilians love Disney World, so it's just perfect. This is going to be the Ilsenio Invitational.
I didn't think about that. I didn't think about it. Now, look, you mentioned Disney World. You mentioned the players, the situation that they'll be in. There will be 35 days, I believe it is, from start to finish, if you do make the final, to be spent in these hotels, in this resort area, basically under not lock and key, but certainly social distancing, all the different precautions that we are taking, that everybody else is taking. I had the opportunity to speak to Margot Poutoukian, who is the chief medical officer for Major League Soccer, to kind of go over some of the parameters, some of the efforts to keep players safe, but also the elephant in the room, which is what happens when and if a player or a staff member, tests positive. Let's take a listen to that. We'll be right back. All right, let's bring on somebody who knows much more about this than we do, Margot Poutoukian. She's the chief medical officer at Major League Soccer. Margot, welcome to Extra Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's dive right in, and I want to make this first question sort of a human-to-human thing, because I think that's how we're all thinking about this. Let's say I'm asked to go to Orlando. Let's say my brother is. Let's say I'm a player or the family member of a player. What are you saying to people to help ease any concerns that they might have about COVID and this tournament?
Well, first off, I'm really ecstatic that we're going back to playing soccer, you know, and getting back to professional sport. And you know, certainly we're committed to the health and safety of our players and our staff. And I think we've done a lot to try to really make sure that we have everything in place and the protocols are in place such that it will be safe. Our players are going and staff are going through some testing prior to arriving in Florida. And then we have a lot of protocols that are set up down there to really make sure that we're keeping keeping the health and safety of our players and everyone really at the you know the utmost of our concern.
So we've gone through just before you came on, and we'll do it again just for clarity for everybody at home. There's two COVID tests and an antibody test before these teams leave for Florida. They'll get another COVID test when they get to Orlando. Once that is a negative test, they can start training as a team. And then there's tests every other day during training and during the tournament. They'll test twice a week, including the day before each game. Now, we know this is a process. We know this is months in the making. Walk me through sort of how this this methodology, so to speak, was built on your side.
Well, MLS, as you know, a lot of other professional sports has a COVID task force. It's and includes all of the MLS medical staff, as well as it's led by Joanne Neal. And we have infectious disease consultants, and we've really been consulting with other public health officials, including the CDC, including the White House task force. And it's really been a pretty thorough process. And as you mentioned, it's evolved. I mean, it's really changed in March when we started with thinking about this and we had started the season to, you know, where we are now getting ready to get back to a tournament situation. And a lot of our teams are currently in the process of getting back to full team training in their own markets. And we're trying to do this, you know, in as safe a way as we can.
When you talk to players, you talk to teams or team staff, or that's communicated from sort of your team, what directives are you giving players to prevent contact, to prevent spread, both in training and games, in the facility? What sort of advice are they getting to prevent what may occur, which is a positive test?
It's a great question. I mean, I think from the very beginning, we've been trying to be transparent and open with the players and staff as to what is COVID-19 and how is it spread and how can they protect themselves. And, you know, we've had several meetings with our medical staffs to review them as they change. Every few weeks we've gotten together. And again, it's been a little bit of a moving target because the COVID virus is changing and we're learning more and more each day. But, you know, the best way to prevent illness is to avoid being exposed. So a lot of the it's not very glamorous, but it's the same messaging that we're hearing all over the place in terms of hygiene, in terms of monitoring. And, you know, if individuals are sick or they don't feel well, we're, you know, telling them to stay home and reach out to the medical care providers and get help that way. Using masks, you know, when they're out, face coverings when they're out in public, social distancing. I mean, that's become a phrase that we're very familiar with. The enhanced cleaning and sanitation protocols are all the things that we can try to do. And, you know, it comes down to general hygiene, washing your hands, you know, not touching your face. Coughing in your elbow. So doing all the things that we can to prevent the transmission is kind of the key messages.
So it occurs to me that there's a big difference between, say, what I'm doing on a daily basis when I'm going to the grocery store or doing whatever, and I'm wearing my mask, I'm putting on hand sanitizer, I'm washing here and there, never touching my face, and playing a soccer game. You know, contact is inevitable. You can't wear a mask when you're on the field just for vision reasons. How do you prevent it in-game? Is there more of a risk of transmission in-game? Is there something that worries you or that you say, hey, watch, I don't spit. We've heard that. Like, what about in-game, in training? Is there more risk of transmission then?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have all the answers as to what the risks are in terms of participation in sport. You know, the phased approach that we, as well as other professional sports, have sort of taken has been to start with just individual training. And as part of that, we incorporated a standardized screening questionnaire and players taking their temperatures at home. Then they would arrive at the field and they'd have a face covering on, they'd wash their hands, they'd have their temperature checked, they'd go train. The next phase was doing that in small groups and allowing them to pass the ball and to shoot on goal. But again, sort of maintaining the social distance. And now we're back into group phase play. And I think we're not really sure what the risk of transmission is, right? So we know it's shared by droplets. It's not felt to be spread by sweat. But it's a contact sport, like you said. So there have been some I've seen some reports from Europe where individuals are with GPS and they're sort of monitoring how close contact they are. And interestingly, I think that the highest amount of minutes that someone was actually in close contact was 13, and that's below what the CDC would consider a close contact, right? We're considering a close contact at least 10 minutes, more than 10 minutes within 6 feet. So, but I think we're doing everything we can in terms of players on the field by, you mentioned, not having the goalkeeper spit into their gloves, avoiding handshakes, not sharing towels, not sharing water bottles. When they're on the sideline, they'll be wearing their masks. Coaches will be wearing masks. And I think we're trying to do everything we can to minimize the contact that does occur during the sport.
Here's the question that I think everybody has, including myself, and I'm sure the players did too, and everyone around the league, because safety is the number one concern here. What happens if there's a positive test in Orlando?
Yeah, and it probably should be what happens when there is a positive test in Orlando, because given the extensive amount of testing that we're doing, I think it would be unusual that we don't end up with a positive test. But we've got two basic scenarios that can potentially occur. And one would be that someone gets sick, someone doesn't feel well, they develop a temperature. And in that situation, we would make sure that they are isolated. They're going to be triaged with an on-site telehealth provider. They'll be put in isolation area within the hotel. They'll get tested. They'll be monitored medically daily, actually 3 times daily. And we'll then test them. And if they test positive, we would end up, figuring out who their close contacts are, doing the contact tracing, testing those individuals, quarantining those individuals until their tests come back. And that's kind of how we're gonna, we're gonna sort it out for someone that becomes symptomatic. The telehealth folks that we're partnering with there in Orlando are we've been communicating with them in terms of what the process is going to be in our protocol, and we've been in touch with the public health department there as well as their local infectious disease COVID team. So I think we'll be in a good place as it relates to that if that occurs. The other positive test is someone that might, through the rigorous testing that we're doing, might test positive. And the first thing that would happen then would be that they would also go into isolation. They'd be assessed to make sure that they actually are, asymptomatic. And then we'd repeat the test just to make sure that, confirm that it's actually accurate. And get in touch with their close contacts and go through the contact tracing as it relates to that as well. So I think the difference is going to be that because we're doing a lot of this testing, our feeling is that if a close contact has been tested and they've been testing negative and they remain asymptomatic, our hope is that we would allow them to continue to train and participate and work. As long as they continue to test negative and they're using basically a face mask at all times.
I guess this is one of those situations as we've lived for the last couple months where you approach it as it comes, right? You have the processes in place, it seems, and when and if, as you said, we'll see what happens. I'm also curious because it's not just the players who are going to be in this situation. It's staff, it's coaches, it's the people working in the facilities, whether it be food service or otherwise. What sort of directives or measures are being taken around that other sort of, not distinct group, but a little bit different group who aren't going to be on the field competing?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think, you know, certainly we're trying to identify and make sure that we do identify any individual that would be considered, you know, high risk individuals that the CDC considers high risk. And so we would certainly handle them differently if they were to test positive and or if they were to be a close contact of somebody that tests positive. And, you know, I think certainly we're working with Disney and the Swan and the Dolphin resorts, and they've kind of like stepped up their game and enhanced their cleaning of all their venues. Their staff is going to be going through some self-monitoring and some questionnaires as well, just to make sure that they are also staying home if they're sick and minimizing the contact there. We are trying to put in place other types of hygiene methods, like, you know, limiting the number of people in the gyms, limiting the number of people in elevators, in the pools. The cleaning is going to be, you know, really important. And then also, you know, trying to do things, simple things like leaving the doors open or, you know, ajar so that people don't have to use a doorknob. And all the individuals that will be down there will be in single rooms. So, you know, there's that whole piece. And we're going to try to make it fun. I mean, it's, you know, soccer is a social sport and you're trying to do things to enhance that, but at the same time, be cautious as much as we can in terms of, being safe.
This is Margo Patukian, excuse me, Chief Medical Officer for Major League Soccer. Margo, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Before I let you go, though, you had that smile when you talked about the game. So I have to ask you about your fandom. When you think about the game coming back, what comes to you just as a fan?
Yeah, I mean, I love the sport of soccer. It was an important part of my life as an athlete, as a coach. So it's just exciting to see us come back. And, you know, I'm really happy to be a part of it. We've got a really strong medical team. And so I think we're, you know, obviously got our fingers crossed that we go through this. We put a lot of planning into it. So I'm hoping that I can't wait to sort of have us come back.
Well, we share the same thoughts. Margo, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Big thanks to Margo for joining us here on Extra Time. You know, obviously as I said before, to lead in, the elephant in the room is what happens, in her words, when there is a positive test. So we will tackle that once we get to it. Players start reporting, teams start reporting to Orlando on June 24th. In the meantime, you see them going through the paces in their home markets, training, being tested, and trying to prepare for this tournament. We had some questions out there. One was about the CCL spot. We didn't mention it could go to Eastern or Western Conference teams. We had some questions, Dave, about where that CCL spot comes from, and I believe you had an answer for that.
Yeah, so MLS controls, you could say, three CCL spots for American-based teams. Canada distributes one, and then one goes to the Open Cup winner in the U.S., which is U.S. soccer. MLS gives one to the Supporters Shield winner, one to MLS Cup. And as we've seen over the last few years, when there's been changes to CCL when it's happening, there's been, sometimes it goes to the team that loses MLS Cup, sometimes it goes to the teams that's the best in the conference that doesn't win Supporters Shield, whatever. This year was supposed to go to the second best points total in the MLS regular season. That spot now is going to be given to the winner of this competition, and it can be a Canadian or American team. So we could have two Canadian teams in CCL for the first time in I don't know how long, which would be dope if 2021 CCL final is between two Canadian sides.
I say we name it.
I'm voting Pacific FC. Shout out Pa. Versus Toronto FC. Let's go.
If it goes to a Canadian team, it's the Eddie Sobrango Memorial CCL spot.
Yeah, I like that.
Give a little Eddie Sobrango shout here and those old school Impact teams. Maybe the Ali Gerba one. I don't know. We could go anywhere we want with this. Any last thoughts, guys, before we get out of here? Of course, we have a show on Thursday still, so tune into that one. It is a live show immediately following the draw for the MLS's back tournament. That draw goes down at 3:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. MLSsoccer.com, MLS YouTube, MLS Facebook, or MLS Twitter. You can watch it anywhere, and we will go live on YouTube immediately following that draw. Charlie Davies will swap out of the draw and come straight back into extra time to help us break down these groups, six of them, with 26 teams distributed. Final thoughts, anything that you didn't say that you wanted to say, anything that kind of jumped out to you as we had this discussion, or do we go back to our daily quarantine lives?
I'll just say this. I was kind of on vacation the last 2 weeks, and it was a really weird time to be on vacation. And I refreshed Twitter 50,000 times, and I went to marches and everything. And it's been a weird time, but it's also been a weirdly hopeful time. And it's been really great to see our players and you guys and so many people standing up and speaking out. And it did this old man's heart some good. So it's been really strange, but it's been hopefully we're on the verge of something bigger and better.
And the Grinch's heart enlarged.
Oh, and also, if any Atlanta United fans want to go out and get together socially distanced, hit me up. Just DM me because I've connected with some. We're out there already. So yeah, let me know.
And if you've got an Atlanta United hat to exchange with Kalen for his rival hat there, the Miami, you know, if you got one.
You can't call it a rivalry yet, Weeby. You can't manufacture a Miami-Atlanta
I would never dream. I would never, ever even think to
still the same old
randomly Weeby. Associate two geographically not even that close teams into a manufactured rivalry. It doesn't even occur to me.
You guys, this time tomorrow, we'll be doing a live show and Weeby will be inventing Orlando tournament rivalries that he's already created. Oh, did you know that Portland and San Jose stay on the same floor? Hence, that's why Rivalry Week is July 21st.
Exactly. It's MLS Real World. I saw somebody out there. As Minnesota United said, this is MLS Real World. Everybody in the same hotel. Everybody like hanging out. We'll see how it all plays out. We got about a month to wait. MLS is back. Starts on July 8th. 54 matches. Six groups, one champion, July 8th, August 11th. There'll be three games every single day in the group stage. So you'll get your fill of soccer. There's no doubt about that. And we'll get you the information on the TV as soon as we have it. That's not yet available. As well as the little technological changes that the league and their broadcast partners say they're working on, whether that be fans in the stands, quote unquote, somehow. Don't know if that's via Zoom or otherwise, but there should be some tweaks coming that'll keep this thing interesting.
Bring back the shootout.
I would hate to be the 9 a.m. game where it's like fans in the stands. And I'm just like laid out in my bed just watching the game. And all of a sudden you're on Zoom behind the goal.
I actually think that's ideal. That's my dream right there. It's just people in various states of like dress.
Relaxation.
Yeah. And, wiping sleep from their eyes, being like, wait a second. What did Diego Valeri just do? I guess it wouldn't be Valeri because he's Western. Regardless. All right, guys, unless you have something else, let's get out of here.
No, Weeby, you're in mid-season form. I don't want to get in your way.
Do you want to ramble for a couple more minutes? I can do it.
Potentially.
I can do that. All right, Thursday, we'll see you then, everybody. Enjoy your day. MLS is back.